At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, everyone. Hi, welcome to Talking in the Rain. I'm your host, Saira Unju, and today my guest is Vancouver-based playwright, actor, creator, Cheyenne Rouleau. Cheyenne and I talked about her newest work, Sunrise Betty's. It's a fictional play inspired by when drug-fueled gang wars controlled East Vancouver and corruption ran rampant in the local police force. She worked with consultants on this play, so we talked about what that experience was like. We got into misogyny in the arts, which inspired Sunrise Betty's. We talked about her writing process, hypervigilance, her next work, Fat Joke, which is a solo show. So naturally, we talked about the difficulty of writing about yourself as well. We had a blast recording this. I hope you enjoy listening to it. You can catch Sunrise Betty's from February 21st until March 10th here at the Russian Hall. And her solo show, Fat Joke, will be premiering in May at the Cult. Enjoy. Would you like to start with an introduction? Tell us about yourself, how long you've been an artist for. Have you always been interested in the arts? And yeah, give us just kind of a overview.
Sure. My name is Cheyenne Rouleau. I'm from Burnaby, BC. I've lived here my whole life, the suburb of Vancouver. I guess I've always been an artist. I know that's cheesy to say, but I've always been very interested in the arts. I decided to go into acting. I mean, I started acting at a young age. For a period of time, I wanted to be a musician. I really pursued that. And then I found my way back into drama again in high school. And then I went to Studio 58. I've been graduated from there now, God, 12 years, which really ages me. And there I found a passion for writing as well as performing. So that's upon graduating, I started doing both pretty seriously. And here I am now, still acting and writing and doing all that kind of stuff. Not a good musician anymore, though. I really lost all that skill quickly. There was a time I was totally convinced I'd be a guitarist in the band. And now I'm like, ooh, I forget every chord. So it's just funny how that like muscle memory just totally
yeah,
like I could just lose it. Yeah, it's like very funny to me to think that I at one point was really sure I was gonna be a musician.
Well, hey, it's never too late.
Sure, yeah, maybe. Maybe I'll teach my daughter guitar or something, and then I'll relearn through her. That's the plan.
That's a good way to do it, definitely. Do you have guitar or musical talents in your CVs and your special abilities?
On my CV?
Yeah.
I do say I can play guitar because I'm convinced that if like a role required it, that I'd be able to fake it enough to be able to do it by the time I needed to do it. You know what I mean? Like I'd be able to be like, I totally know what I'm doing. I think I still say that I can play the oboe on there, and that was really like I could play the oboe in high school, so there's absolutely no way I can play the oboe anymore. But you know, you gotta flesh out that section and make you look like a multifaceted person, right? So
you get the role first, think about the rest later.
totally. Yeah.
So and currently you are working on / you will be showcasing Sunrise Betty's, which mm-hmm. is your most recent endeavor, I'm assuming. Would you like to tell us what Sunrise Betty's is about and what people can expect from it?
Sunrise Betty's has been my little brainchild for 6-ish years now. It's play that Itzazu Productions is putting on in Vancouver. It's about a fictional all-female gang in East Van in 1972 that's inspired by real gangs that were around in that time. And it's really, it's dark, it's suspenseful, it's got that real gangster movie quality to the play, but it's also funny and weird and kooky. And I really just wanted to write a play where I had a bunch of women on stage behaving badly. And this is what happened. The show is what happened. So it's definitely not for the faint of heart. It's like violent and pretty in your face, but it's super fun. I'm having just the best time.
How did you get interested in like this topic specifically? Because it is, as you mentioned, inspired by like the real Vancouver history.
So I mean, it started with me and my now husband sitting down watching movies one night, and he's like, "Have you seen The Departed?" I'm like, "No." "Have you seen The Godfather? Have you seen The Usual Suspects?" He's listing all these gangster movies. I'm like, "No, they never really piqued my interest." And so he's like, "No, you gotta watch these." So we sat down and started watching The Departed in particular, and I was like, "Oh, I like this genre. I really like this genre." And so I started sort of just binging all the sort of classic gangster movies, and I loved them. I loved the thrill of them. I loved the suspense and everything. But I couldn't help but notice that all the women that were in these movies were either like the like sad wives, or they were sex workers, or they just didn't exist. Like there wasn't any women in these films. So it was like, man, as an actor, I would love to play one of these roles. So I'm like, screw it, I'm gonna write my own. So that's where the idea sort of started. And then I happened upon a book called The Last Gang in Town by Aaron Chapman, who is a local Vancouver historian. And it's a true account about the Clark Park Gang in the 70s versus the VPD. And it just opened my eyes up to this whole history I didn't really know anything about in my own city. And so from there, I pieced those two ideas together, and Sunrise Betty's is what happened, is what birthed.
Nice. I love that. And you also had Chapman as one of your consultants when
Yeah.
you were, writing this play. And you had three other consultants as well on top of, And so how was it working with consultants for something you were creating? How was that process like for you?
It was intimidating as hell at first, to be honest. Again, I mean, our first consultant that we consulted was Aaron Chapman. And because I had just read his book, I was like a little fangirl, and I was like, oh my God, he's gonna rip my play to shreds. He's gonna hate it. And absolutely, all those like regular artist insecurities that you have. And I ended up chatting with the guy, and he's just the coolest and was so open and willing to like share his knowledge. And then he's actually who hooked us up with two other consultants, Kim Brucker and Danny Mouse Williamson, who are original members of the Clark Park Gang. Through his research and books, he became friends with them, and he contacted them and was like, "Yo, this girl's writing this play. Would you want to talk?" And so I got to talk to those guys, and that was a trip. That was so fun. They were so open and willing to like, work with me on this and share the historical accuracies and what it was like in the gang. So it brought like just a real richness to the script and to my experience. And then our last consultant was John Gruinsky, who's a retired VPD officer, and he actually helped form the integrated gang unit in the 80s for the VPD. So he has a lot of like inner knowledge of what the gangs were like in that time. I mean, a little bit later than the play that we're setting, but he had a lot of great insight. And the consultants have just been with us through this whole journey, and they're going to continue to be with us throughout the run and get a chance to talk with the audience members after the play and give more of their amazing, hilarious, wild selves to the project. And I'm so grateful.
How long have you been working with the consultants for? Because you mentioned that this play overall has been in the works for like, what, 6 years, you said?
Yeah, it's been
Yeah.
wild.
Wild.
Time is crazy. What is time? Yeah, the other day I literally told somebody I was 27, and I was like, I'm 34. My brain has not caught up. Yeah, so they haven't been along through the whole process, because originally with the script it was more of like a heist kind of script. It was very different in the first couple drafts. But when I really started diving into the history, that was like I probably a couple years into the project. That's when I really wanted to start getting some more authenticity involved, and that's where that happened. But it's a zoo, and particularly Sebastian Archibald, who's the artistic director there, he's my dramaturge, and he has been so open to the like various bizarre drafts and ideas, and you know, he's been with me from the start on this, and I'm so happy with where the project's ended up.
And so this is not the only thing you've written by far. You actually have a multi-award winning play, The After After Party. You've written for TV as well. So I have a couple questions, but the first one being for you specifically, how does the process of writing a play or writing a script go? Where do you start from? Just kind of talk me through that process.
I mean, it's different for every script that I'm doing because sometimes I start with an idea of the plot. Sometimes I start with an idea of characters. Like, for example, with the After After Party, we had me and my writing partner, Katie Hoffman, who wrote that script together, had previously done a 10-minute play called The After Party, in which we had written these characters, and it was based off of kind of a true experience of a botched threesome we almost had. It was a thing. We were in college. But that started with like characters, which were like these exaggerated versions of ourselves. So when we went to write the After After Party, we knew we wanted to write a longer version with those characters. And we basically started there. We started with like, what shit would these characters get up to? You know, what situation could we put them in? And that's how that started. And whereas with something like Sunrise Studies, the overall picture was sort of what I started with, which is that there is a gang. It's going to be something that occurs over one night. It's like the genre was more what I started with. But for me, I'm definitely more of a character-driven writer rather than a plot-driven writer. That's why I gravitate towards more like episodic TV, where you know you get to know the characters, and then you know that's the heart of the show, and then whatever situation they're in is, you know, it's kind of secondary to who they are. And so that's really where I start. I like to imagine people, and with this show, with Sunrise, thinking about women in that time period, in this situation, which is, you know, the town was harsh, you know, like Vancouver didn't used to be this like pretty, shiny, bright new city with all these developments. It was like a shitty port town, very, very working class, and there's a lot of, you know, working class, rough and tumble people. And so that's where I started there. And, you know, knowing the women in my life, my crazy aunties, you know, my family that had lived in Vancouver, that's where I started with like who these people could possibly be. And yeah, that's what's really important to me as a writer, I think. And I think that's informed by the fact that I'm an actor, because I want every role that I write to be fun for an actor to play. I want to play that role, you know? And so that's really a starting point for me, because I just think there's so many. I mean, you talk to artists all the time, you talk to actors all the time. There's so many just missed opportunities for women in film and TV. And you know, even though we're getting better as a society with it, like the roles just aren't there. We just don't get to behave the way men get to behave in these roles. We don't get to have the same amount of fun and the same amount of freedom and the same sort of scope of existence in the media that men get to have. And so that's really always a starting point for me, is I guess contempt for my profession. And that's an easy way in for me.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of plays I've read where I'm like, oh, I would love to play this role, and every single one of them is a man.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen a bunch of postings for like The Little Mermaid, and the only female roles were like Ariel and her sisters, and then Scuttle and Flounder and Sebastian, and all these roles that are like, these are animals. I'm not sure why you have assigned a gender to them. Like, why the fuck is Flounder like a gender specific role? Like, all I know about Flounder is that he's chubby and nervous, and that's me. So like, why am I not allowed to audition for this shit? Are you kidding me? And it's not even subtle misogyny anymore. And it's so accepted, you know? Like, that's just the way our industry runs. I hate it. I fucking hate it.
Yeah, actually, yes. And you don't even realize how that's like implemented in your brain. It's just there. For example, when was this? I think this was like 2 years ago. Actually, Studio 58 did the Rocky Horror show, and I was interviewing one of the actors who was playing Riff Raff, which is played by a guy in the movie. So I was like, oh, where did the idea of gender bending come from? She was like, well, they're aliens, so there isn't really gender. And I'm like, that's such a good point. Why did I not think of this?
Oh, fully, fully. I mean, now we're just getting into conversations about general misogyny, but I think about it all the time with I have a daughter, I have a 5-month-old, 6-month-old today. Oh, Jesus Christ. 6-month-old daughter. And I find it funny that like even things like gender neutral clothing, like things that are considered gender neutral clothing, are just masculine things. Like the default is masculine. I'm like, what? Why? Like why are you imposing this at such an early age? Like why is pink and frilly considered a girly thing? But anyway, I could go on, I could go on. But it's so prevalent in the arts, and like everyone wants to think that like artists are so like open and free and like no, we uphold this so much in our industry. The media is like half of the problem, at least. So like who are we? Sorry, I'm getting real
No,
heated.
I agree. That's a very valid thing to be mad about.
Thank you.
Yes,
Thank you.
I get it. Yeah,
Yeah.
definitely. But at least with contemporary, I think, well, as you mentioned, it is getting better. It's still not there, but more contemporary work has more opportunities for non-men, which is what we
Yes.
want.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And it was fun casting this show because I got to see there's 5 roles for women in the show, and there's one man. And I was really proud to put out an audition posting that was like, LGBTQ plus, please, please audition. I don't care, there's no assigned ethnicities to any of these characters. There's no, I'm not going to put them into any box. I want to see the actor that's for the part, and we'll go from there. And there's non-binary people in our show, and people of different ethnic backgrounds, and it's like, yeah, that's I could never write a character thinking like I have to put this character into this box. I just want to see the actor do the thing and find the spirit of the person and go from there,
Yeah, I love that so much because then you can also add on to the character or maybe adjust their story depending on the actor's experience with well being themselves, which yeah, I like seeing that it's becoming more common now. I've seen it more in TV for sure, where shows will like cast, for example, a Japanese American person for the role, and they like adjust that character's story to be Japanese American, and then they get a whole plot line about it, which is amazing. That's how you get representation.
Exactly. Like, who am I as a white writer to sit here and tell you what this person's background is? I want to see the actor do it, and then I want the actor to bring as much or as little of themselves as they want to the role, and that's really important to me as a writer. And I found, particularly with this process with Sunrise, it was really cool because we did so many workshops with actors, and so we had a lot of different people reading different roles. We had like a workshop a year for a while, and there was these times that clicked for me as a writer. If I had some kind of block around a character or something wasn't shining right, sometimes an actor would come in. For example, Kelsey Kinnett-Wavy, who's playing Kate in the show, they're just the coolest person ever, and they came in with their natural voice and their natural cadence and their attitude, and I was like, oh, that's Kate. And then I could write Kate after that because I had a voice connected to it. You know what I mean? And I think that's so special. And now with the full show cast just doing rewrites on the fly, I can hear my characters' voices better knowing who's playing them. And it does nothing but open up a whole new world for me. It's super special. So I find that like I think a lot of writers and directors and maybe producers shoot themselves in the foot by having too much of an idea of what this character is outside of what's just written on the paper before they cast it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And it makes a lot of sense. I'm thinking, have you seen La La Land? You know how in La La Land, she, Emma Stone's character, gets hired as an actor, and they're like, we don't really have a script. We're just gonna, write it as we go, get to know you. When I first watched it, it made no sense to me. I'm like, how do you make a movie without a script? But hearing what you say, it makes a lot of sense, actually.
I mean, you have an idea of, I mean, I know there's directors and writers that work this way where you have a script, but you basically just tell your actors, okay, this is what's happening in the scene with your character. This is where I want you to start, and this is where I want you to end. Go. And, you know, they'll make sure that they hit the specific points that they need, but they write it loosely so that the people can make it more genuine. And I was saying this to my actors the other day. I was saying, you know, because we were doing some rewrites and we were getting really nitty-gritty with like words. And I was like, listen, the way I wrote this show is to sound like the way people actually talk, because nothing pisses me off more than listening to a bunch of people say dialogue that doesn't sound like fucking people talking. It drives me crazy. I like naturalistic stuff. I'm like, so I don't care if you get it word perfect. Throw in whatever, you know, little filler words you want, because I want to see the character thinking of what they're saying, because that's how people talk, you know. And I don't, I'm like, I have people talking over each other because that's what happens in conversations, you know, all these little filler things. I'm like, find that for yourself. If there's something that I really specifically need you to say, then I will tell you, and I'll make sure that that's known. You know, I'll tell the director that this is really important that they say it this way. But the characters are yours now. You know the story. You know where things have to end up. Go, be them, you know.
Do you find it difficult at all to write a conversation that actually sounds like a conversation and not scripted?
I mean, yes and no. I think it is a skill of mine, that I hear the conversation in my head, and it's like music in my head. But it's so hard when you're trying to do any kind of exposition. Like, if you need backstory, if you need, like, there's like certain plot things that you need to happen. That is one of the trickiest things as a writer, is like, how do I make this not so like obvious and so expositional, you know? I need people to get these things across to the audience, and sometimes that's really hard because it's like the characters already know the thing, you know. Like, sometimes you're having a scene with two people and they both know the same information, and so in real life they wouldn't say that because they both know that they know the information, but the audience doesn't know the information. I need the audience to know the information, so how could I get the audience to know the information? And that's, you know, that's the art of writing for sure. And definitely that's been the part of this process with the show that's been really difficult as a writer, but it's also super fun because you just find new ways to do it, and you find new ways to get things in there. And I love surprising my audience too, and that's hard because I write like the audience is really, really, really smart, because they usually are. And I usually hate scripts where they write it like the audience is really dumb. So I have to be smarter than them. I'm like, fuck. Shit, I gotta be smarter than them. So it's a lot. It's a lot of work, but I find it so fun and so rewarding when it works.
Yeah, I find that with some stuff, the writers, they want to surprise the audience, but they know that the audience is smart, so then they just to like make something that does not make sense, or it doesn't, like follow in line with what's been happening. And oh my God, I hate that so much. Let me guess the plot twist because you did a good job setting it up.
Yes. I'm also, I wonder, you're probably the same as me. I'm one of those people that, like, I can't know anything about a movie going in. Like, I'll know like the title, basic genre, sure. But I'm like, I don't want to know anything about the plot, because my writer brain and my ADHD brain and whatever, my anxiety trauma brain probably, is trying to predict what's going to happen the whole time. And I want to be surprised. It happens so rarely that I actually am surprised. So I have to, like, you know, I remember my sister once begging me to watch this movie. I can't remember what movie it was. She's like, yeah, and then there's this amazing plot twist at the end. And I'm like, I don't want to watch it now. You ruined it. You ruined it just by saying that there was a surprise, because now I won't be surprised. because I know the surprise is coming, so I'm gonna try and guess the fucking surprise. Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. It's
Exactly.
hard.
Oh my God, I'm the exact same way.
I knew it. I knew it.
It's so funny because last year I was watching a show with my, do you know Better Call Saul?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I have never seen Breaking Bad. I know nothing about it. And I am not a big drama person because I get really invested in the characters, and any smallest thing that happens to them, I just like feel so bad. So,
Yeah.
yeah, so I'm a more of a comedy girl, and my friend showed me a scene from Better Call Saul that which was funny, and I was like, "Oh, I like it. What show is this?" And he's like, "Oh, you should watch it." And then so I started watching the first episode and I messaged him. I was like, "Well, I just watched the first episode. It wasn't really funny. It was kind of sad. Is it gonna get funnier?" And he's like, "Oh, yeah, definitely. It's gonna get so much funnier. Let's watch it together." And so he tricked me into watching 6 seasons of the show.
That's
However,
amazing.
oh yeah, it was wild. I did kind of, I would say, get him back by predicting every single plot line.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think around the fifth season, there was this one big episode. He's like, "You're never gonna guess what happens," and I guessed what happens. He's like, "Sarah, watching stuff with you isn't fun. How do you know what's gonna happen?" I'm like, "I analyze, I observe."
Yeah, is that, I mean, this is personal, but are you, do you have anxiety problems?
Nothing diagnosed.
Nothing I know. yeah, I have diagnosed anxiety problems. And so, like, it's something that I see so much. Just that, like, hypervigilance of, like, I need to know what's happening before it happens so that I'm not surprised, so that I don't have the emotional reaction. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, I'm planning my emotional reaction, because I'm watching The Wire right now. I'm on the last season. It's a fucking devastating show. I don't know why I'm doing this to myself. Well, I do. It's the best written show on TV. Oh my God, every episode I'm like crying. I'm like looking at my husband like, I can't keep doing this. And he's like, we got it. I'm like, I know we have to finish it, but this is so devastating. Everything is so, there's like no humor. Like, it's just the fucking bleakest shit. Anyway,
Oh no, I can't. I
it's
can't.
hard. It's hard out there for us sensitive souls.
I literally teared up watching the new Wonka movie. So like
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I get it. I get it. I also have all those like post-pregnancy hormones, and like we started watching The Wire when I was pregnant. I was like,
oh
that's
my
a
God.
terrible idea. I cry at everything. I literally cried. I was like putting baby clothes away before she was born, and I was like, this
No.
sock is so small, and I like lost my fucking mind. So yeah, I get it. I get it. It's
Oh
wild out
yeah.
there for us.
Oh my God. But yeah. I love that you we understand each other. I appreciate that. So, talking more about writing, on top of Sunrise Buddies, you're also premiering a show this May called Fat Joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, tell me about it. What does that show entail?
Oh my God. Why do I do this to myself? I don't know. I'm supposed to be on Mat Leap right now, and I'm just premiering two shows. Fat Joke is just me on stage. It's like a one person storytelling kind of stand up comedy style show that is basically recounting my funny anecdotes of being an actor who has a fat body and what that is like, and how I sort of have had to move through the world, and honestly, where my sense of humor comes from, and you know, sort of analyzing the way that we look at fat bodies, and the way that we put our own people put their own perception of what they think a fat person is capable of, or what they're good for, you know, just all that sort of fat phobic shit that goes on in our world. As well as just some there's some facts in there. There's some, you know, there's some little TED talky bits about, you know, things like the BMI and the history behind that, and just trying to, you know, get everybody on the same page about why our society might look at fat people the way we look at fat people, and what it's like to seen through that lens. And hopefully it's funny, and you know, people open up something about, you know, their own perceptions in it, and Yeah, I'm not there to, change minds or anything, but I am there to tell my story, and we'll see how people respond.
No, it's really important though, because unless you're fat, you don't really understand it. It's such a different experience from straight sized people that even like the smallest things, like, when you're in a room with a bunch of people you don't know, you're thinking, am I the fattest person in here? It doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter. But you know for a fact that straight sized people aren't thinking about that.
Oh yeah, there's a constant, like we were saying about hypervigilance before, there is a hypervigilance and like a constant, you can't leave that part of your brain. Like it's always there, and there is, trauma response built into that, and there's social response built into that. And especially someone who is a performer whose like whole job is for people to see me and have their eyes on me, it can really change your trajectory. And it really, writing this play, I've opened up my own eyes how much it has influenced my development, and some in some good ways, in some, dramatic ways, in all sorts of ways. And there is definitely levity in the show. The show is a comedy, and I think it's essentially funny to be a fat actor. Essentially, that's my thesis. It's pretty funny. But I hope that it makes people pause for a second and think about their own sort of, preconceptions. And everybody walks around with their own shit. Like, I'm a white person, so I, people of color have that hypervigilance in it in a different way that I will never understand. And I'm queer, but I'm in a straight presenting relationship, so the hypervigilance of, being publicly gay is not something I really have to deal with, and that affects the way you move through space, and the disability, and all sorts of stuff does that. So I hope that everybody can find a piece of this that, even if they're in a straight sized body, that they can relate to. It's been a really interesting process. It's the process is still ongoing. The script is not done. It's one of those pieces that I'm really nervous and excited about.
Bringing it back to you being character driven when you're writing. So writing something like Fat Joke, where essentially you are the character you are writing for, how has that been different from writing for something like Sunrise Betty's?
A lot more difficult, and you'd think it would be easier because, like, I'm a real person and I know all my experiences and so background done. But it's so vulnerable, and I've actually been struggling with it a lot because I've had a pretty traumatic year with my pregnancy. Was I was very, very ill, and the birth was really difficult, and my daughter was in the hospital for 2 months, and I was in the ICU. Like, I almost died this year, and so I have a really, my relationship with my body is really fragile right now, and so there takes so much vulnerability to be to like truth to write the truth about yourself, and I've been really struggling with it, to be honest, in the wake of all these things happening. And my lovely director producer Chelsea Haberlin has just been reminding me that, like, you'll never be able to write the full experience of who you are, and you don't need to include everything because you've been on this planet for 34 years and you have hundreds and hundreds and thousands of stories. So if you're nervous about saying anything, you don't have to say those things. You don't have to talk about those stories. You can be wherever you need to be in the piece to do it, right? Like, I don't need to talk about all of my trauma. I can talk about the pieces of trauma that I feel like are resolved or that I'm okay with sharing. But it's hard as a writer because you want to be as honest and open as possible, but then you get yourself into this, as I did, I got myself into this like sort of spiral and bad place mentally, trying to include all this stuff that wasn't quite healed for me. So it's a balance, and it really does take having the right people on the project with you to not push you in a direction you're not ready for. And my experience with theater school was not like that. I was definitely, and I think, a lot of people who went to school at the same time I did were put into positions where they were, which were not healthy mentally, for the sake of art, for the sake of impressing someone, for the sake of class, for the sake of standing out, whatever. And I have to remind myself every time I work that's not a good thing to do. And we shouldn't be doing that. And so that's been eye-opening for me because with my previous work, it's been a lot of it's all been characters that I can kind of hide behind or not hide behind, but I don't have to connect so closely to myself. There's that distance there, and this for this there isn't any distance, and it's only me on stage, and I have nowhere to hide. And so I have to unlearn some of the toxic things I was taught about the creative process, so that I don't hurt myself mentally. And it's a lot, but I'm fine. Doing okay.
That's you are so convincing.
I'm also so tired. I have a 6-month-old.
I believe you. Oh man, you must not be getting any sleep.
I mean, we worked for a while. She was doing really good and sleeping through the night. And then, but we, I've been sick, and then my husband got sick, and now she's sick, and we're all sick. And yeah.
Yeah.
Hot tip for all you parents out there: if you're sick, don't take NyQuil at night, because getting up to do those bottle feeds at 3 in the morning is just so confusing when you're really high on NyQuil. Everything is just so confusing. I woke up and I was like, what? I have a child? Like, I couldn't, my brain was fucking mush. So don't do that. Don't do that.
Imagining you holding your baby, like, whose child is this?
Who is this? Why am I here? What is happening?
Hey, noted.
Adding anything that's going to make you more tired into your life, don't do it. That's terrible. Your brain can't handle it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. How involved are you in the, like, with the rehearsal process for Sunrise Betty's?
Thankfully, I'm very involved, which I love. I have a really good working relationship with Jamie King, who's the director. I love them. They're the coolest person in the world. That was super cool. And they were like, in the process, I asked them, I was like, I don't know, like, do you want me in the room? And they're like, yeah, fuck yeah, come in the room. Like, it's great. Because, they also understand that it's a new work. And so there are things that need to be fixed in the script as we go. Or, there are questions people have. There's nobody, you can't consult like a Shakespearean website and be like, what the hell does this mean? Like, I could just be there. So that's great. But I, like I said, I have a kid, so it's a struggle with childcare. Frankie, my daughter, actually came to rehearsal the other day. That was fun. She like fell asleep in the middle of this like really intense violent scene. It was hilarious. but yeah, I'm allowed to be there as much as I want to be there, and that's really great. And I think that just speaks to what an amazing inclusive director Jamie is. And honestly, it's a zoo. The production company as a whole is just the most collaborative, like community-based, rough and tumble, fun fucking people to work for. So it's been really good. I feel very part of the project.
That's amazing. And you, I'm assuming, having more flexibility with how much you, well, they said you can be involved as much as you want. So you can also balance that with, your 6-month-old as well. That's
Yeah,
nice.
there's no like pressure, right? There's no pressure for me to
Yeah.
be there. But I'm welcome to be there as much as I can. So, it's really nice. I mean, Sebastian has kids and he knows, and it's just a, like I said, lovely little community. And everyone's really, really supportive. So it's been good. I've had experiences in the past where I've written things and then essentially just like handed them off and like went into the shadows, and that's terrifying. It's so scary. So it's fun to be there and be part of the process with this. I really that's the way I like to work.
Yeah. Are you going to be, for Fat Joke, will you be directing yourself as well, or are you working with a director?
No, writing and acting is enough. I'm not going to direct myself. That would be insane. For me, anyway. No, Chelsea Haberlin is going to be the director for that. So she's the artistic director of New World Theater. She's also Sebastian Archibald's wife, who is the zoo. So my two plays are very connected right now. It's like a married couple that, is hiring me so much. It's the best. So she's going to be directing, and she's been there through the process I've had with writing it and everything. And so, yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be there's a quite a tight turnaround from now until when we open that show that's not written. So we'll see how it goes.
I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you. Thank you. I cannot wait to sleep afterwards. I'm gonna
Oh
sleep
my
so
God.
well.
Yes. June is gonna be so good for you.
June is gonna be my month. It's gonna be great. I'm doing absolutely nothing.
Sounds good.
Everyone can just lose my phone number for 1 month.
June 1st, immediately. They're like, oh, we can't contact Cheyenne.
She doesn't exist.
No.
She's not. Forget you know her. Yeah. Men in Black, wipe your memory. Gone.
Exactly. But yeah, well, it's been lovely chatting with you. Is there anything you want to talk about before we go?
No, this has been great. Thank you so much for
Awesome.
having me on. It's really fun. I feel like I'm just like chatting with a friend.